That way you can spread out.
I got lots of spreadsheets.
I know, and you need to tell us which spreadsheets go with which bill.
Okay. I can do that.
So. Okay, thank you. Appreciate it, Caitlin. Okay, we have Director Oberle with us to discuss 2350 as the, oh, I'm sorry, 2352 as the sponsor. I'll turn it over now to my Vice Chair, Congresswoman Lemon.
Thank you, Congresswoman Rivard, and we are discussing the first bill concerning the tax commission changes that Congresswoman Rivard has sponsored. And I'm going to give you the floor, Congresswoman Rivard, to, if you need, whatever you want to speak to, or if we need to go ahead and let Ms. Oberle go.
Well, I can do an introduction.
Perfect.
A little bit. So I had met with the tax commissioners, well, before HUNCA, which I appreciate, and we had a really good, they had a good meeting, and I was in attendance to listen to, you know, what they've been looking at and the changes that they are proposing. And at that time, we had the support docs were provided for us to look at. And so this is one of those that I consider a courtesy sponsor, which I don't mind doing for any of our commissions or boards. And I'd like to just hand it over to the director, Director Oberle, to get into the specifics.
All right, Ms. Director Oberle, you have the floor.
Do I have to keep this pushed down to here?
No, you just talk into it, and I will tell you that it's best to kind of just stay this far from it. And then if you notice that you, if you can't hear yourself, that means it's not working, and we can get you another one.
Okay. Okay, we did quite a few changes on these three bills. A lot are tied together, but we, you know, Congresswoman Rivard said it had to be separated out into three, so some may bleed over into the others. The first one that we really wanted to look at was our sales tax rate. That had not been changed since 06, whenever the Constitution and all of these laws had been written. So we went to do a comparison just to see how we fared against the state and against neighboring tribes. So one of the documents that you guys will see is a sales tax rate comparison. As you can see on our list of, you know, eight or nine different entities, we are the lowest when it comes to sales tax. Of course, Oklahoma being the highest, but then several of the ones, our neighboring tribes are quite a bit higher than ours. So taking a look at that, and then with that, we also looked at the lodging tax rate. Some tribes have different, some have all the same tax rate, and also the liquor tax, the alcohol tax. What we wanted to do is just do another straight across the board. We are now at 5% on everything, and we are proposing to raise that up to 7% across the board. Again, it doesn't make us the highest, but it does bring us up from being the absolute lowest. It kind of puts us in about a mid-range. We did a few numbers just to kind of see what kind of impact that would have on our revenue. And if we just looked at numbers that we had last fiscal year, just by raising the state income tax, we could possibly increase our revenue close to $400,000. Again, we anticipate that to go up once, you know, the Pawhuska Casino and Bartlesville Casino are operational, because those currently do not have hotel rooms, so we're not getting lodging tax on that. And then, of course, Pawhuska doesn't have alcohol sales either. So just a simple, you know, small increase. And this cost is, it's not absorbed by Osages or by our entities. This is the sales tax that everybody else pays. I mean, yes, it would be some Osages, but it's mainly for, you know, the people that visit the casinos, the people that rent the rooms, that are, you know, spending money at the restaurants and the casino bars. And, you know, so it's basically that cost is passed on to the consumer.
I have a question, Chair.
Go ahead, Congresswoman Rivard.
Okay, so the sales tax rate would increase to, what is it, did you say?
7%.
Okay, so the sales tax is in regards to the casino with the bars, restaurants, and the hotel?
It would be across the board as far as merchandise. So, because the alcohol and the lodging in the law is separated. We're just asking for the same increase on all three. So specific to sales, we're looking at any kind of, like any of the food sales would go through that. Any of, not smoke shops because tobacco is done differently, but if there's a gift shop or if they sell other merchandise besides tobacco, that's where the sales tax would come in at. And then the alcohol tax, that's where we get all of the alcohol sales within the casino, as well as our convenience stores. The sales tax would be that extra percent on everything that's sold at those convenience stores. So all the pops, the candies, the chips, those would be increased by that 2%. And then all the alcohol tax in the casino, as well as, you know, the alcohol that they sell in the convenience stores. And then as well as the lodging tax, we would ask to be increased just to match and be a straight across the board. And so that would be an additional 2% on those room rates.
Chair, may I have another question?
Yes, please continue.
Okay, thank you. So with regards to the smoke shops, you're saying the sales tax would go up on the non-tobacco merch or items. Is that correct?
Yes, correct. Tobacco is a complete separate entity. It wouldn't touch that at all.
And so with the $400,000 increase in revenue, that would be considering the sales tax rate increase and the lodging tax rate increase of 7%.
Yes, that's factoring in the increase in sales, alcohol, and lodging tax.
So I'll continue, Chair.
Certainly.
Well, one of the discussions that I had with the director was that I did appreciate them addressing this now during HUNCA in preparation for our gaming enterprise to submit their annual plan. It would have to, you know, also include the increase in sales tax and lodging on our side that would affect their annual plan. So that was, and also I believe the projected revenue that we have seen in the tax commission area has been stagnant for, I can't tell you how long, for a long time. And so I'm gonna support this increase. I don't think it's too much. It looks like it's at 2% in both areas. And I appreciate the comparison, you know, to the other entities, including the state of Oklahoma. Those are just my comments. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Congresswoman Rivard. Committee, do we have any other questions or comments concerning the legislation on the table? Hearing none, is there any movement?
I'll make a motion to report out ONCA 23-52 with a due pass recommendation.
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, please say yes.
Yes.
Opposed? Hearing none. Motion carries. Give me just a moment. ONCA 2352 will be reported to Congress with a due pass recommendation. Thank you, committee. Next, we have ONCA 23-53, an act to amend the liquor tax up to 7% and to establish an alternate effective date. Congresswoman Rivard, you have the floor.
Okay, thank you. So, again, I will let Director Oberle speak to this. I'm trying to figure out which spreadsheet goes with the liquor increase.
All right, let's have a minute to do that. Could you give us a little bit of direction, Director Oberle?
Yes, there's not a specific sheet just for the alcohol because it's the same as the sales tax. I couldn't find any other tribal nation that separates those out or had different rates. They typically just had one sales rate, and that went kind of across the board. But because it's listed in our legislation separately, we wanted to make sure we addressed it separately and brought it up to the same level as the rest of the sales tax.
Okay, let's talk to us a little bit about the increase. And just give us a little, like you did with the very first one that we just passed out.
Yeah, again, it's tied in with what we talked about first. Right now, it's been at 5%, and it's been at 5% since 2006. So it's been stagnant. And again, this extra tax, again, is going on to the consumers at the gas stations that are buying, you know, the beer and alcohol at the casinos and the gas stations. And so by raising this, we're really passing that expense on to the consumers and just kind of raising our tax base to be more comparative to what others around us are.
Thank you, Ms. Oberle. Committee? Any questions or comments?
I guess I have a question, maybe with the sales tax. I'm so sorry. Does that include, like, the visitor center and items that you sell at the tax commission?
This only applies to items being sold on our reservation. So it has to be trust land, restricted land. Visitor center is in fee simple, I believe, so that sales tax does not apply to us. They have to pay the state. So this is only for business being conducted on our trust land, which is mainly the casinos and the smoke shops.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, I went backwards. I just had a thought. Sorry.
That's okay. It's a good question, because I mean, the reason it's a good question is because if there's any constituents listening in or they're following the legislation, and if they get their receipt and they're like, hey, this is more than what I should be taxed, it's good for folks to hear that there is a reason.
Right.
It's not a mistake.
Yes.
The visitor center is not on trust land.
Right.
All right, committee, any questions or comments? We ready for movement?
Yes, Chair. I will make a motion to report out ONCA 23-53 to Congress with a due pass recommendation.
Second.
A motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, please say yes.
Yes.
Opposed? Hearing none. The motion carries, and ONCA 23-53 will be reported to Congress with a due pass recommendation. Thank you again, committee. We'll move on to our last bill on the agenda, which is ONCA 2354, an act to amend the Title IV, an act to amend Title IV to increase the business license fees, to change the license exemptions, and to change the business license fee date of expiration, and to establish an alternate effective date. Congresswoman Rivard is the sponsor. You have the floor, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. I think you'll find in your packet a breakdown of the registration fees as they currently sit with comparisons to other tribes. And I will turn this over to Director Oberle.
All right, Director Oberle, just start wherever you'd like to and work your way through them, all the changes.
Again, we have quite a few changes. Did you want to start with tags or license fees? Because the section in this one is specific to business license fees.
Let's talk about business license
fees. Okay. So currently, you know, we do have a business license, so anybody that is doing business with the Osage Nation is required to obtain and continue to have a valid Osage Nation business license. Currently, the cost of those licenses, it is laid out in law, in legislation. So it's $50 for non-Osage-owned entities and $25 for Osage-owned entities. That is currently in the law. It's for a year, and it's currently set to renew every December. That has been a little problematic as we have grown and as our business license numbers have grown so extensive. Trying to get everybody renewed in the month of December would be a nightmare. So the previous director started doing a year-to-year based on the date of enrollment. So the day they applied, they were getting a full year from that date, which staggered out, you know, their renewal time. So we would just like the code to match what was instituted in policy and in practice several years ago on that, to keep that up. We would also like to allow a two-year license. And the reason for that is our casinos, which provide us probably 60 to 65% of our business license, our referrals from the casino, they operate on a two-year cycle. So if we could get on the same schedule as them, it makes it a lot easier for all these entities doing business with us, because then they're just getting one reminder, they're renewing everything at the same time, versus they're renewing with the casino every 2 years, us every year. It got very confusing for them, and then they would be out of compliance, and then we're having to chase them down. So if we could get on the same track for those that want the two-year business with casino, if we could be on that same track with them, and they don't have to, you know, for the ones that are just doing business with us, if they just want a year, they can stick with a year. So it's an option. They don't have to do a 2 year. But for those that are casino, you know, sent by the casino, they're already on a 2 year cycle. And so it's a lot easier for them to stay on that cycle. And then we would like to increase the fees for business license. Again, most of ours are sent from the casino. They charge $100 a year, whereas we are 50. So we would like to raise ours up to 50 for non-Osage businesses and charge the same amount. So that way we're basically charging the same amount for our business license as our casinos are. To us, it kind of looks like it's more advantageous for businesses to do business with our casino than it is the government, and we think we're more important, so therefore we want to be just as much. So we want to raise up to $100 for the yearly fee for the business license. And then for Osage owned, we just wanted a $10 increase. Again, just, you know, inflation, the cost of everything, the cost of doing business has, you know, skyrocketed, but we don't want to hinder or prohibit Osage owned businesses. So rather than doubling that, we're just going to do a small $10 increase to a $35 a year. Still very minimal to be able to do business with the Osage Nation.
So concerning the business license of, so let's just, for clarity purposes, and you were very clear, but I want to just reiterate it, is Osage owned businesses will be able to, with this legislation, if it were to pass as written, there would be a $10 increase for their yearly business license.
Yes,
from being 25. An Osage owned business, meaning yes. They would pay $35. And if you're non-Osage, you would pay $100.
That is correct.
Just wanted to make that really clear for anyone listening in so that we get the right things put on social media. Thank you.
A question?
Madam Chair, I mean, Ms. Rivard, yes, sorry.
Yes, thank you. So, Director Oberle, you know how when you guys send out a renewal notice for the tags, mm-hmm. Do you also send out a renewal notice for the licenses?
I do. I do those through email. And those are sent out usually at the end of the month prior to when they are expiring.
I have a question. Can I go? Do you need to go on? So walk me through. I've just had a thought. So you do it through email for business license?
Yes.
Can you tell me why you changed that?
That's how it was done previously when I arrived.
Okay.
So I just kept that system because that was how they were typically used to getting it. And most of our business vendors, they want to do things electronically.
Certainly.
Not through paper. That plus through COVID in recent years, the mail is, I hate to say unreliable, but the amount of time it takes to get things in and arrive through the mail has been increasingly longer because we've noticed that with tags, we're having a huge issue with the mail with tags. It's easier just to stay, and it's costless for us.
Yes, cost efficient. Mm-hmm. And you're not having anyone calling in saying, you know, issues with emails.
The main ones with those are because they haven't updated their information, and it's going to an employee that no longer works there. And so we're like, okay, well, if you let us know, you know, then they're like, oh, we didn't go to it. And I'm like, well, I sent it to who you had registered on file. Oh, well, they don't work here anymore. Send it to this person. And then we just update the record, and then we send them out the new one.
Okay. Yeah. Does your record possibly have a backup email? That would be an option to have out on there?
They can. They can put as many emails as they want to get notes. We do have some that, you know, want it to go to their accounts payable department. You know, so, and again, most of these are, you know, very large corporations that are doing gaming business.
Gotcha.
So most of them, it's a pretty standard email. It's all going to their accounts payable department.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions from the committee or comments?
have a question.
Congresswoman Rebar.
So how many current business licenses do we have?
I do not know that off the top of my head. We are close to 3,000, but not all of them are active at this time. Because some have expired and some choose not to reactivate if they're no longer doing business. If they just had a 6-month contract, or if they're a builder and they finish their project, then they don't renew because they don't have any reason to continue to do business. I think in fiscal, if this helps, because I do more on the money side, but in fiscal year 21, we brought in close to 37,000 in business license fees. So by increasing, even though some of these will be Osage, we are anticipating increasing close to another 24,000 on top of that.
Continue.
So is that still lower than the business license fee that they would have to pay into the state?
Business license fee at the state, I believe, is 100 still. So we would be still even with the state. And again, that's for them to do business with the state.
Okay. So does the Butcher House and Harvest Land, do they have business licenses?
They do not, because they are Osage-owned entities. And in the law, Osage-owned entities are not required to carry a business license, so our LLCs are not required to carry a business license, and neither is the Butcher House or Harvest Land. However, Butcher House and Harvest Land do pay sales tax.
Even if the Butcher House is sitting on trust property, though, in the industrial park?
Yeah, we collect on trust.
Okay.
Okay, any further questions or comments? Hearing none, any movement?
Well, I think we would need to discuss the change in the license exemptions.
Oh, you're right. Tax. Sorry about that. All right, Ms. Soberly.
Okay, so again, while we were looking at all of our fees and trying to get more comparable and seeing how, again, as Ms. Rivard stated, we have been stagnant as far as our income over the last few years, and trying to see where some of the disparities lay in that. So one thing that we really wanted to look at was the cost of tax. And so I put in a couple of different spreadsheets. One is the initial registration, so the first time you bring in the vehicle to get tagged for the very first time, and we put in those costs. And as you'll see, again, we are at the bottom as far as state and surrounding tribal nations. We currently have a standard table, which is in the law. I believe the last time that was updated was maybe 2015. It was increased a little back in 2015. But it's a set amount. And back in 2015, the highest amount for cars was $60,000. Well, you can, you're hard pressed to go buy a car for $60,000 these days. But that's where our chart ended. So we started looking at that, and that's what got us thinking is, do we just need to add another column? Do we need to put in more of those? And so we started looking around and seeing what other nations were doing and how they were doing it. And what we found is most of them are now using a percentage scale versus a stagnant chart that would have to come back and be amended, every time inflation or every time, car prices increased. So we looked at those and we did a comparison on that. And so you'll see the comparison, and I tried to do them across the board so you could see real live numbers. How much a $20,000 car is going to cost to register it versus a $60,000 versus a $100,000. And then what the other tribes and how much they would charge if you were to go register the same vehicle at theirs.
Okay, so is everybody able to see the chart that she's speaking of? It's initial vehicle registration.
Chair, I just wanted to let you know the information we received did include that, so I'm just going to let you know in that first column, the initial vehicle registration is at the top would be 20,000. The second column would be $40,000. The third would be $60,000. The fourth would be $80,000. And the last would be a vehicle at the rate of $100,000.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just did the math. It was like 40, 60, 81. Okay, I appreciate that.
So, you know, again, we looked at those and we looked at the percentages that everybody or that other nations have been charging. You know, of course, Oklahoma, they've got two. They've got the excise tax plus their sales tax. So you are paying roughly 4.5% on the price of your new vehicle. Down from there, the larger tribes like Muskogee, Cherokee, the Pawnees, they're all doing a 1.5%. Then some of them will charge a little extra for title, charge for registration. Then a couple of the smaller tribes are doing a 1%. And then also some are adding in fees for a tag or some for a title. We kind of we don't want to be at the bottom anymore. We think we can raise that up a little bit, but we don't want to make it astronomical so that our constituents can't afford to register new vehicles. So our proposed number is a 1.25%. That's still quite a bit lower than a lot of the tribes, and then not including, because the tribes that do the 1%, some are charging a larger tag fee. We wouldn't charge that. We would just do the base, the 1.25 fee on that. And we did that, again, is we tried to look at, again, how to increase without increasing the burden on those that probably need it the most. So by doing that, by doing it by a percentage, then the larger tax burden is on those that are buying the $80,000, $100,000, $120,000 vehicles. They're the ones that are going to carry more of the tax burden versus the ones that are purchasing at a lower amount. As the way it goes right now, just an example, we had someone come in last month, special order Range Rover for $177,000. Well, according to our chart, they paid the same amount as I did to tag my Hyundai because it stops at that 60. So if you paid $61,000 for your vehicle, you pay the same amount as that person that just paid $177,000. That's where we thought this isn't fair. That needs to have more of a tax burden than those that are paying the 60. And then it helps lower the ones that are paying the 20,000 and the 30,000. So that's kind of where we wanted to go, kind of a middle ground on that. And that would be the change to the new registration. So it would take us away from that table, the top part of the table, and go to a percentage. You want me to keep going on to renewals or?
Yes, I'd like for you to talk a little bit about what that looks like at what we're proposing now, and compare it to the table of where we're at now for a $20,000 car and what it'll cost for a $20,000 car if this were to pass, and then do it for the 40, if you'd walk through those.
Right. Okay, so the way ours is right now, because we have, you know, we have a chart that we do it, and so the numbers for a $30,000 car right now. So right now at a $30,000 car, you come in and you're going to pay $391 according to our chart. If we go to a 1.25%, you're going to pay $375. So it's a little bit of a savings for you on that part. So that's why I say the lower ends, it's not going to be that drastic of an increase, where the drastic increase is on the higher end vehicle numbers. If you wanted to look at, I think it's a 20,000. Right now, a $20,000 car would cost you $250. On the chart, I think it's 202, between 15 and 30,000. This would say, so it was in blocks before. So regardless if you spent 15,000 or if you spent 30,000, twice as much, you're paying the same amount. There was no way to get, it's just how it was done back whenever all this was created. And a lot of the tribes did that in when they first created them, they did charts. But again, this would also alleviate us coming back every time we have inflation or every time there's cost, because it'll be that sliding scale, it'll be off a percentage. It won't be a block graph.
So let's talk about the high end then.
Yes. So the high end, so let's say, again, the example of the person that brought in the $177,000 car, who only paid $769 at this new one, would be paying us $2,212.
Okay.
So if we say $100,000, obviously it'd be $1,000. I could do that math. So they would, if you buy a $100,000 car right now, you come in, you're only paying $769 again. Same as the person who bought the $61,000. But on the new scale, you would end up paying $1,250. So again, the increase, the higher you go, then the more tax burden that you have.
This might seem like a strange question to some, but do you track? I mean, I'm just interested because we're going to hear some flack, which that's okay. You know, if this passes, I understand why you would want to go this route. And do you happen to know, like, and if you don't, that's totally fine because this is totally off the cuff, okay? But, like, any percentages or ideas of how many people buy cars that are 30,000 and less, and then 30 to 60, and then 60 to 100?
I don't, right off, I don't know those. We are in the middle of getting a new software system so that we can start doing better reports and better analysis on that. What I can say, and this is, and again, one of the reasons when we get into renewals, you'll see it as well, but because our first registration costs are so low, we are getting an abundance of people that come in to register it when they first get it, and then they leave and go renew somewhere else. Just for example, I had one that came in yesterday, pulled up that person's account. From 2008, they've had 76 cars registered with us. They've renewed 3. And it's because you can buy it registered with us super, super cheaper, and then you can go to the state because the state is actually cheaper on renewal prices than we are. Whereas we were catching up on our prices on renewal. So we have a lot that come in for that very first cheap vehicle, and then they're jumping ship and going somewhere else for the next 10 years, whether it's the state or another tribe.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to look into that.
Yes.
Joking. Well,
no, we did, and that's, I mean, I don't know if you want to move on, but that's why we are also proposing the reduction in our renewals. Because okay, right now, again, that person, you know, however much you spent to get it, when you come back to renew your car next month or next year, it's going to be $166 with us. But you can go to the state, and it's only, yeah, and the state's only going to charge you $96. So you're going to jump.
Absolutely.
Why not?
Makes sense.
It makes sense. And so,
can't blame them.
So they're getting the very cheap registration on us, and then we're not getting the follow-up business. They're jumping ship and leaving.
Okay. I appreciate that analysis. It's interesting. Okay.
Like I said, we did a lot of comparisons. We ran a lot of numbers.
I appreciate that information. Congresswoman Rebar?
Yes, thank you. So I'm going to go backwards, just, or not backwards, but where I thought this would fit in, but Trey felt otherwise. Let's talk a little about the limiting the number of disabled veteran complimentary license plates to 2.
Okay. That was something that when the board looked at, they had questioned, because everywhere else in the code, anytime we're doing discounted plates or free plates, we limit everybody to 2 except this group. And so that was kind of their question, is why are we going to limit, you know, seniors only get 2. Veterans only get 2. But disabled veterans, it was left unlimited. There was no cap. So they were kind of like, they wanted it just to be across the board, even with everybody. And whether we raise everybody to 3 or we keep everybody at 2, I don't think we had a preference. It was just, let's just make them all. If we're going to, you know, if we're going to say these people are getting, you know, the free ones, let's just make them all the same, really.
All within the same time frame and the same,
yes,
amount.
Right, right.
2 free per year.
Right.
Registrations.
Mm-hmm. So that was kind of their thought process on that.
Well, we like consistency down here. Okay. Any other questions on this particular topic concerning licensing of and registration of our vehicles? I want to talk about something real quick. Licensing of UTVs. Do we call them UTVs now?
I believe they've kind of switched from ATVs to UTVs.
Utilitary. What are they, what is the use? Is it utility? Terrain vehicle?
Thanks.
Okay, so I had a question. I mentioned it to Director Oberle, and I had a constituent call and say, hey, I tried to get my UTV registered because I'm a farmer and I need to drive it on the highway, Highway 60, in fact. And I want to be able to do that instead of having to get my pickup. And naturally, I gave him a hard time. I said, you know, I don't know why you're bothering me about it. But anyway, I think it's an important discussion at this point, which we're talking about licensing. So can you talk about that a little bit? Because I see a lot more people driving these.
Right.
These types of vehicles. And if we can tag them, great. But if we need to do something to change it, then let's do that, since we're talking about it. But, you know, then where do they fit into this?
Okay. Again, some of you may or may not know, the state of Oklahoma passed a different law. I think it was about 2 years ago, maybe two and a half. That is allowing certain UTVs to be street legal. Now, in the past, when you bought a UTV, if it was going to be street legal, it would come on the title and it would say that it was manufactured to be used on the street. We've always tagged those. Those have been fine. Those are in our code and our policies. We can do those no problem. But what the state did is they came out and said, okay, you may not have bought it equipped to go on the street, but if you make all of these different changes, and it's a pretty extensive list, but if you make all of these changes, get it certified, then we will go ahead and license them to go onto the street. So a lot of people, that's where a lot of our, I'm gonna say complaints, but questions come in at, is they are now wanting that done to theirs so that they can do it. The problem is it's not addressed in our code. It's not allowable. Ours specifically says if it says street legal on the title, we can do it. Now, we can still register them. We can still give you a title for it. We just can't give you the plate to make it street legal. So you could still bring it to us. We can do all that title. Then you could take it to the state if you want it street legal. It has been an issue. I've talked to the AG's office kind of extensively about this to see if there was a wiggle room around it. But basically what we're going to have to do is we're just going to have to put it in our code if that's something that, you know, we're wanting to include. I've talked to the board about it. They are on board bringing it in. So it is something that we are looking at to include and to change that code so it's something that we can do. We just, with our attorneys, we're going to try to figure out the language so that we are not the responsible body inspecting it and saying, yes, you've done all those modifications, because I couldn't tell you to go out and look at one if they'd made all their modifications, and we don't want to be liable if somebody, you know, gets pulled over. Well, they said it was good and it's not. So that is something that we are looking into. We hope to have that when we bring back our, you know, our full overhaul of codes. We do look at adding that in. But in that same regard, with these changes, we also did the same thing with all of our other categories. So RVs, motorcycles, ATV, you know, the RVs, again, rather than going from this table, we're going to go to the same sliding scale of the 1.25.
Thank you, Ms. Oberle. So right now, if an individual presented a UTV with a title that says, does it actually say street approved?
Yeah, it'll say manufactured for street use.
Manufactured for street use. If they bring that to you today, you're able to give them a tag.
Yes. Yeah, those we can. And the other ones, we can still do a title and register. We just can't
tag the vehicle.
Yeah, we just can't give you a plate to go on the road.
Okay. So the registration would definitely be cheaper.
Yes. Registration would be cheap, and then they could jump to the state like everyone else.
Okay. I appreciate that. Looking forward to that, to those amendments. Congresswoman Rebar?
Yes, Chair, I have just a question for the committee. One thing I wanted to discuss, which is not an item, but it would fall into one of these pieces of legislation, if you guys would let her. I don't know if it's after the movement. Just don't want to break any committee rules, but I wanted her to talk about the comps.
Oh,
About what?
The comp. She's done a lot of work showing us about the hotel and our casino and the comps.
It does pertain.
That have been provided, because if you'll see, I just wanted her to touch on that a little bit before we get out of committee, and she's provided information from back in FY18. And I think it's worth discussing. I think a question had come up during the hearing about all the comps, and we were talking about the VIPs and things of that nature. Well, also in that discussion came, well, is the casino paying the tax on those comps? And my question to Director Oberle and the commissioners was, you know, what do other tribes do? Because I wasn't for sure.
All right, great. Without any objection, Ms. Oberle, tell us all about that.
Okay, and that is one of the changes that is in the bill that we requested. After we had sent these proposed changes, we did work with the AG to get a little more clarification in the law regarding the lodging tax specifically. That was our main focus that we were trying to, you know, focus on. So we thought maybe we needed to change language in the code that made it more specific, that said, you know, even if you, you know, provide a room, if it's comp, that the taxes are still due. The AG's opinion was the taxes are always due. That it's in the law that if that room has been provided by, if I use my players club and they say, hey, you earned so many points, you get a free room, that is in lieu of me paying for it, but that does not exclude the taxes being paid on that room.
So free room including taxes.
Yes. And that is in our current law, is that those taxes should be collected. So in preparing for that, once we got that opinion, and that's just been recently that we did get that, we started running all of the data as far back, you know, as we felt comfortable going, that we had really good data. So I went back all the way to fiscal year 18. And what I did is I calculated out the amount of comp rooms that was being provided at Skytook, Ponca City, and Tulsa, and I did those for every month for every year since fiscal year 18. And then I took that amount that were being provided in free comps, took that times the 5% lodging tax, and calculated how much money we should have been collecting on comp rooms for each year. Then I took all of those and I provided a yearly sum of each of those numbers. It did take me a while for each of those years. And so on this table, you'll see if you go back from fiscal year 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, and 23, we are currently owed a little over $628,000 in taxes due to those comp rooms. Now, there is a portion in the law that says if it was done for other purposes, like if it was a comp room that wasn't for that, then that could be exempt, but they would have to supply documentation to the tax commission on why it would be excluded. And so, like I said, originally we had put in here to change the wording because we thought the wording needed to be stronger. We can still change the wording to make it stronger. Right now, the AG says it's not necessary because it's always been that he agrees with our position on it. But we just thought, well, why not beef it up just so we definitely know this is what, you know, we are expecting to get, and that's, you know, the taxes paid on any comps.
Thank you, Ms. Oberle. So have you asked the casino for what's owed?
I have sent a communication, again, just showing the data that I've found, just so they could see the same numbers that we see.
Could you send us the, do you have I'm sorry. Go ahead, Congressman King.
So presently the casinos do not collect the tax on the comp rooms, is that accurate?
That I do not know, because again, this we are just now raising this to their attention. If they have collected it, it hasn't been submitted to us.
But we do have an AG opinion that says that we do have the lawful authority to collect.
The AG's office agreed that the language in the current code says that they should be collecting taxes on, again, for players' rewards, things of that nature. So that is the position we have taken. But like I said, we have just now started communications with the casino on, you know, on all these numbers and what we're finding.
Thank you. One last question. I guess I'd ask Congresswoman Shaw, because she's is really knowledgeable about gaming. Do you know of other tribes with comp rooms that haven't paid the tax, or do you just, could you provide feedback in this realm, please? Thank you.
Congresswoman Shaw.
Thank you, Congressman Keene. So most tribes do pay the tax on comp rooms, but some don't. I mean, it's kind of a mixed bag, but the majority of the casinos, at least in Oklahoma, would pay tax to the tribe on a comp room, but not all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Congresswoman Shaw. I was just wondering, Ms. Overly, could you send us that correspondence concerning the AG?
Could that request go to the board?
Absolutely. The board, yeah, certainly. That? Not a problem at all. Okay. But I mean, I think I would like to see that. I would like to see that, his opinion. Okay. Not that I disagree or anything. I would just like to see it. Because a lot of times what comes out of this conversations and things is a different perspective or understanding from other people that are listening in, or even some members of Congress. And I want to be able to educate the constituents on, you know, why this topic's being brought up, and that it's really for them. If you think about it, big picture, it's a drop in the bucket, $650,000. I mean, it's, you know, it's that penny at the bottom of the purse, Paula. I love that.
But it's
still revenue for your tax commission. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I mean, I'm just saying, I want them to. Yeah, it is. But I want them to do what they're supposed to be doing. And that's definitely what this body, and especially this committee, has been very vocal, is that you have to get in line with the code, and you have to know the code. And, you know, and if we're not there, let's get there.
I think, Chair, if you remember last year, that was some of the information I was requesting from them with regards to their annual plan.
Yes, ma'am. I do. Okay. Next.
I'll make some
You're
movement.
Good. Okay.
I will make a motion to send out ONCA 23-54 to Congress with a due pass recommendation.
Second.
It's a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say yes.
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 Motion carries. ONCA 23-54 will be reported to Congress with a due pass recommendation. Thank you, Ms. Overly, for being here. And thank you for all of the visuals, all of your homework. I look forward to more of your homework. And seeing how we can improve our tax commission.
Thank you. And
where are the tax commissioners today?
They are currently in Louisiana at a conference, so they were unable to participate.
All of them went?
Yes.
Okay. Is it a business type relation thing?
Yeah, they sit on a different board, and they are there for a different board business.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So the next item on our agenda is adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor, please say yes.
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 We are adjourned. Thank you, committee.
Do not leave without signing your reports.
Yes, ma'am.
Billy's in the starting box.
Committee, do not leave. Billy, get the report.